Shabbat Shalom. Well, this weekend is the 43rd anniversary, I believe, of the decision of the United States Supreme Court, January 22nd, 1973, Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton. And so this morning I do want to talk, I want to share with you some thoughts on abortion and the will of God. And let me start with this passage, just a brief verse out of Deuteronomy chapter 32, which in essence says it all. See now that I am he, and there is no God besides me. It is I who put to death and give life. I have wounded, and it is I who heal, and there is no one who can deliver from my hand. The basis of all that we hold true is the sovereignty of the living God. So let's talk about a couple of different things this morning. First, I want to talk about is the first thing is God's default setting, which is life, if we simply would not interfere. But now ask the beasts and let them teach you, and the birds of the heavens, and let them tell you. Let the fish of the sea declare to you. Who among all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this, in whose hand is the life of every living thing? Now, whenever you buy a computer or a television or some kind of an electronic device, it comes out of the box with factory pre-settings, right? And these govern how your unit will function if you don't make any manual changes. We call those default settings. When it comes to computers, our own rabbi in training and technology maven, Jerry, he really knows his stuff. He knows what to keep and what to get rid of. And he can adjust the settings so that the computer operates at peak efficiency. And I've had to call on him a couple of times to do that for me. But when it comes to us human beings, we also have default settings. When a woman becomes pregnant, other than a little more attention given to her diet and additional rest, there's nothing more she needs to do. You see, those default settings are already perfect. They don't need to be tweaked. They don't need to be changed. God has so done these things. Once that life is set in motion, the genetic coding that's already there will function on its own according to God's design. And approximately 9 months later, her baby girl or baby boy will be born. That's God's default setting, human life growing and developing if we would just not interfere. It takes an act of willful and forceful intervention to stop that process. And we must be clear about this. Abortion does not fall under the category of remedial surgery. It doesn't remedy anything. And pregnancy isn't a sickness from which one needs a remedy. Abortion isn't therapeutic. It doesn't increase anyone's health. It's anti-therapeutic. It ends one life and reduces the well-being of another. In fact, abortion is violent interference in the process of human life. And you know, deep down, we all know it. That's why abortion activists have to resort to dishonesty in the words they use to speak about it, frequently using euphemisms so that we really don't have to deal with the word. You see, they have to do that. The truth about the nature of human life is so powerful and compelling that in order to convince ourselves otherwise requires highly specialized misuse of grammar and apparently advanced degrees and academic indoctrination. Well, how did we get to this place? I'd like to talk about the high cost of spiritual attrition. The wicked will be turned back to Sheol, the psalmist tells us, even all the nations who forget God. And that's what happened. We would be mistaken to think that everything was fine right up until January 22nd, 1973. If we're going to be honest with ourselves, there's a history that we have to reckon with. We have national sins to our debt. There were broken treaties with the First Nations. There was human slavery. And though extraordinary and rare, there were abortions all along. So how did we become a nation that now shrugs indifferently at the killing of over 1 million babies each year? Well, one thing is certain, our moral decline didn't happen overnight. It was gradual. It was incremental and really all but imperceptible to the masses who weren't paying attention, who didn't understand the times. As a nation, we made the same mistake Israel made. No sooner did my people enter the promised land and begin to enjoy prosperity than we let our guard down. We put ourselves on spiritual autopilot. And before long, our people lapsed into idolatry, sexual promiscuity, wickedness, and violence, the very things that the prophets of Israel decried. Well, the United States has enjoyed generations of prosperity, but we also let our guard down. You know, the early signs of that was when schools like Princeton and Yale and Harvard, which began as divinity schools, embraced the so-called Enlightenment and morphed into these institutions, bastions really, of liberal arts. At its inauguration in 1636, Harvard's motto was Veritas pro Christo et Ecclesiae, truth for Christ and church. It has since been reduced to Veritas, truth. Many historians agree that the steep decline began in the 1950s and accelerated in the 1960s when many young people rejected their parents' moral principles. Now, to be honest, that older generation had come to accept certain moral values as a given, but couldn't articulate the reasons, which were rooted in Scripture. Well, why is it wrong to do that? It just is. I'm sorry, that doesn't cut it. That generation failed to articulate the biblical foundation for the morals and the values that we hold. The sexual revolution of the 60s and 70s, despite its promise of purer love and peace, now enshrined in the songs some of us still listen to, left people empty. The promises were not fulfilled. People were left empty and aimless, just as much as before, only now emotionally scarred, carrying new and devastating diseases, and a lot of unplanned pregnancies. The Ten Commandments were systematically removed from schoolrooms and houses of justice. And about the same time that moral restraints were thrown off, so was respect for the Bible and the fear of the Lord. Teaching or even reading the Bible was outlawed in public schools. And with growing disregard for God and His Word came disregard for the sanctity of human life. And that's what happens when a people forget God, when people abandon their reverence for Adonai. And Rabbi Paul put it this way, "For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. And just as they did not see fit any longer to acknowledge God, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice." You know, Rabbi Lauren often reminds us that things go with things. when human life was redefined to exclude the baby in the womb, other societal evils also proliferated. Things go with things. Murder rates skyrocketed. Riots ensuing around the country. Activist judges with agendas like so-called euthanasia. And you'll recall they ordered the withholding of food and water from Terry Schiavo, who wanted to live but who was unable to speak in her own defense, leading to her agonizing and painful death. Politeness in political discourse has all but vanished. And all you need is 5 minutes on Facebook to see that. Politeness is gone. Wisdom and discernment have been replaced by political correctness. And certain unpopular views evoke violent outrage on college campuses, which, last time I checked, were once celebrated as havens for the free exchange of ideas. And no issue evokes as much anger or even violent opposition as that of abortion. How did we get to this place? We abandoned God, the God of Israel. Let's talk about some of the worst people in human history. Pharaoh, Haman, Herod, Hitler, and Kermit, not the frog. Kermit Gosnell. These are profiles in depravity. Genesis 6 says, Adonai saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. And it didn't get better. The psalmist, many centuries later, wrote, God looks down from heaven on the sons of men to see if there are any who understand, any who seek God. Everyone is turned away. They have together become corrupt. There is no one who does good, not even one. So the question is, what causes people to become murderers? The short answer is sin. Some resort to murder out of paranoia. Others out of unrestrained hatred. Still others from nothing more complicated than just plain greed. Pharaoh and Herod each ordered the killing of newborn Israeli boys out of paranoia. Pharaoh feared that the Jewish people who had grown numerous might eventually turn against him. Satan, who knew that the Messiah must come through the Jewish people, put it in Pharaoh's heart to kill their sons. But he failed to prevent the birth of Moses, the one who would eventually lead Israel out of Egypt. And we should remember the courage of those Jewish midwives who, despite orders from Pharaoh, which was the law, despite orders from Pharaoh, spared the lives of the baby boys. Herod, hearing the report of the wise men who came to Jerusalem, feared that the newly born Messiah posed a threat to his kingship. And his paranoid response was a direct parallel to Pharaoh's. He ordered the massacre of all Israeli baby boys 2 years of age and under. Once again, a powerful human leader acting as a pawn for Satan. However, once again, Satan missed his intended target, and Messiah Yeshua was kept safe and will eventually redeem all of mankind and destroy the devil. But in the meantime, consider the human toll. In the 5th century BC, Haman set out to destroy every Jew in Persia. For him, it was mindless hatred, triggered ostensibly by the refusal of one Jewish man, Mordecai, to bow down and show him honor. But for Haman, it was more likely the desire for retribution, since he was descended from Agag, king of the Amalekites. You may recall that God instructed Israel in the Torah to destroy the Amalekites, the reasons for which we're actually going to consider in just a few moments. King Saul and King David were the ones commissioned to see it through. Gratefully, Haman's truly diabolical plan was thwarted, and we have that in the book of Esther, by a series of God-ordained, and I'll put quotes around it, coincidences. And our people survived and even flourished in Persia. So now fast forward to the middle of the 20th century. Hitler's ambitions were of an entirely different sort. By eradicating every people group that he deemed genetically inferior, Hitler believed that he could engineer a master race of humanity, largely German, and usher in a utopia on Earth. And so what did he do? He targeted Jews, Gypsies, Blacks, Poles, Russians, Slavic prisoners, and those with birth defects or other disabilities. Young or old, it didn't matter. And do you know that of the 6 million Jewish people that Hitler had murdered, 1 million were children? Hitler was a eugenist. He believed that mankind could realize its ultimate potential if genetically inferior, and again quotes around that, if genetically inferior groups could be stopped from reproducing. The same belief was held by one Ms. Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, and also an avowed eugenist. Planned Parenthood is, of course, the leading abortion provider in the United States. And that brings us to Kermit, not the frog. Kermit Gosnell, the convicted murderer and former abortionist doctor from Pennsylvania. Kermit Gosnell is currently serving a life sentence in prison without possibility of parole, having been convicted on 3 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of involuntary manslaughter, and a host of lesser but still horrific charges. There were literally hundreds of state reports filed against him, but only enough physical evidence to convict him on 4 counts. Now, for this guy, it was all about money. Gosnell routinely performed illegal late-term abortions, and it was well known that he was willing to perform abortions at any stage of pregnancy, so he made a ton of money. Because of government ineptitude, he was able to operate in a clandestine fashion for a number of years. And in fact, when his clinic, so-called, was finally raided by the FBI, they were actually there on a drug raid. Only then did they discover the appalling conditions of his offices. I dare not describe to you what was found, but a column in the April 12, 2013 edition of The Atlantic actually quotes extensively from the grand jury report, and it is genuinely sickening. Regardless the motive, what is the net effect? Whether born of paranoia or mindless hatred, or some twisted notion of a genetic utopia, or just plain greed, the net effect is the same. And it is atrocious. We are talking about the murders of multiplied millions of innocent human beings, often the weakest, most vulnerable, and those without a voice in their own defense. And it's about the weakness and the vulnerability that I would now speak to you. I want to talk about abortion and the Amalekites. What God thinks about the targeting of the weak and the defenseless. Psalm 82 says, "Defend the cause of the weak and fatherless. Maintain the rights of the poor and oppressed. Rescue the weak and needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked." I mentioned a few moments ago that God directed Israel to destroy the Amalekites. Why? What did they do differently from all the other ites that we read about in the Torah? Well, the answer is found in Deuteronomy chapter 25. God says, "Remember what the Amalekites did to you along the way, when you came out of Egypt, when you were weary and worn out, they met you on your journey and attacked all who were lagging behind. They had no fear of God. Therefore, when the Lord your God gives you rest from all the enemies around you in the land that he is giving you to possess as an inheritance, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Do not forget. Now, Israel was confronted by a lot of different enemies once we were in the land and as we made our way into the promised land. And we faced even more enemies once we were settled in there. But only this one group was singled out by God for destruction. You see, ordinarily, those military encounters were army to army. But we're told that when our people had just come out of Egypt, desperately weary, traveling through the arid wilderness, that the Amalekites ambushed us and they attacked at the rear. That means that they targeted the elderly, the sick, those who maybe were injured, mothers with young children, the very people struggling to keep up. That's who the Amalekites attacked. It was cowardly and despicable, and it earned the Amalekites a curse from Adonai in perpetuity. Justice and protection on behalf of the weak and the vulnerable is a prevalent theme in the Torah and in the prophets. And it really shines through in the gospel. It gives us a glimpse into the heart of God, the love that he has for human beings, the high value that he places on our lives. And however brief they are on this earth, God cares about our well-being. There have always been those in society who were weak and vulnerable. And there have always been ruthless opportunists lying in wait to profit from it. We are not to stand by idly and watch it happen. The psalmist charges us with their defense and their rescue. And I would remind you, these words were written to the people of God, not to the heathen. We have a higher calling, and we need to fulfill it. We also need to reject the idea that it's an either-or proposition, that we must choose between either preaching the good news or speaking out and acting on the pressing moral issues of our day. Anyone who suggests that you can only do one or the other is creating a false and unbiblical dichotomy. John the Baptist managed to both preach the kingdom and also decry immorality in high places. The Jewish midwives in Egypt are remembered eternally with honor for acting on their conscience, rescuing life, even when it meant defying the king. I am convinced that we will be held accountable if we remain silent in the face of the systematic slaughter of millions of the most defenseless neighbors of ours. They really are our neighbors, the unborn. They are the most vulnerable members of the human family, and they are unable to speak in their own defense. Now, let me take a moment here to really stress something that is very important, and I really hope you'll hear me on this. Some of you have had abortions. Some of you stood idly by and didn't say anything when you knew somebody was going to. I'm guilty too. There is forgiveness. When Yeshua came to forgive sin, he didn't come to forgive sin selectively, like, well, I'll do this one and that one, but I'm not going to forgive that one or that one or that one. There is forgiveness in Yeshua the Messiah for every sin, including this one. And the process of forgiveness is the same for abortion as it is for stealing a candy bar, for lying to your friend, for anything. The process is one and the same. Confess your sins. He is faithful and just to forgive you your sins and to cleanse you from all unrighteousness. Now, I realize in sharing these thoughts on the sanctity of human life weekend, I realize that for the most part I'm preaching to the choir. That is, I know that most of you feel as strongly as I do about the need to protect human life at every stage. The unborn, the elderly, the handicapped, the sick, those who are most vulnerable and likely to be targeted for elimination. But let me simply recap what we have heard. First, we need to respect God's design and not interfere with a life that's developing according to his will. Second, we need to remember where we have come from and how spiritual malaise led us down the path to the present crisis of morality, and we need to not let our spiritual guard down. Third, we need to recognize that there is a cosmic battle afoot, and that Satan seeks only to steal, kill, and destroy, and he frequently uses human agents to do his bidding. We need discernment, and we need courage if we hope to see an end to the wanton slaughter. And finally, we need to embrace our role as those who see the plight of the weak and defenseless and speak out on their behalf. It is the very least we can do if our hearts are beating in concert with his heart. May Adonai, the God of Israel, give all of us in 2016 both opportunity and courage to speak and to act in the interests of life. And in so doing, may we honor him and walk in the way of that great cloud of witnesses, those who have gone before us and who are watching us even at this very hour.